after a season of record-breaking performances and historic moments. This Bucks team is postseason ready, led by a dynamic group of players who have redefined the game. It's officially Fear the Deer season. Help defend home court and join the best fans in the league at Fiserv Forum for the Bucks playoffs, presented by BMO. Don't miss the chance to experience the intensity and excitement firsthand. For more information and to purchase tickets, visit bucks.com/playoffs. That's bucks.com/playoffs.
You're listening to a Bucks Plus audio production on the Bucks Plus Network.
Your weekly pulse on the Milwaukee Bucks, straight from a Bucks legend. This is Here District with Marcus Johnson, alongside his son and 1995 NCAA champion, Chris. Here's MJ.
All right, welcome everybody. It's another episode. Fantastic, boys. The Here District.
Now. Oh, you smiling now, huh?
Oh, man. Well, yeah, I'm smiling, brother. You know I'm smiling, but I'm smiling because it's a beautiful day in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, for a whole lot of reasons, man. And it's the Here District. It's the Fantastic Voyage. I'm the captain, Chris John Johnson, my son, the first mate, man. And we got a lot to talk about. But first, you see this T-shirt that I'm wearing, Chris? Can you see that, man? It says, let me stand
Boo,
up.
Boo Williams. Boo says, Williams,
says,
baby.
Okay. It says Boo Williams, all right? So I was down in Virginia this weekend and got in town in Milwaukee to see the game. I didn't work the game, but I was at the Boo Williams girls basketball event for the EYBL, right? That's a Nike sponsor, high-level event. Man, and I just wanted to start off this broadcast before we jump into the Bucks talking about the women's game. And I saw some really talented young ladies down in Virginia, and one team in particular. So I'm at the airport, Chris, coming back home, trying to make it back home in time for the Bucks game. And I see this young lady, about 6'1", 6'2", pretty young lady, blonde. And so I asked her, you know, how did her team do it and who did she play for? So she told me she was with, her mom jumped in. Her mom jumped in and said, well, she's with the All-Iowa Attack. And she played 17U, and they went 5-0. I was like, okay, cool. So what's your name, young lady? She said, Chloe Johnson. I was like, okay, we could be related. I'm Marcus Johnson. You know, if I'm black, she's white. We could be, you know. But anyway, so Chloe Johnson. Then a mom chimes in again that she's eighth grade playing 17U and lighting it up on 17U from Duluth, Minnesota, because they don't have that high caliber. Then I come to find out that the All-Iowa Attack is the same outfit that Caitlin Clark came up with in Iowa.
That's right.
And so just a lot of good stuff like that. We got a young lady out at Ontario Christian in the Los Angeles area named Special K. She was just a freshman at Ontario Christian, averaged about 35, 36 a game. So, I mean, just so many great talents. And this is where the area where Juju is from. So I just wanted to give a shout out to women's basketball. Because this is the honest to God truth, Chris. I knew more women's players between Angel Reese and Flaje Johnson and Caitlin Clark and Juju Watkins and just all these terrific women's ballers out there. The young lady from UConn, I'll say her name wrong. Bucket. She gets buckets.
Paige. We call her Paige.
Paige gets buckets, you know. And so I knew more women's players than I did men's players. Sure. So it was just a great weekend, man, just being out there. So I fly home. My boy Dennis Gray picks me up. This Benz at the Chicago airport. We hustle down to my apartment, which is right across the street from the Fiserv Forum, right? And it's the game starts at 6. Milwaukee time, Central time. We get into this area about 5.
The district area? Is it the district?
The downtown area off the freeway. Coming up 43, you know, the 94 to the 43. We get off the freeway and there's nobody, it's no crowd, no nothing. And that tells you that all the people are inside. It was a ghost town. And this is like 10 minutes before tip off. So I run up to my apartment. Do what I got to do, freshen up, whatever, go over to the game, watch a little bit of the game on TV, head over to Fiserv Forum. I didn't really want to jinx what was going on because the way that game started out, man, you know, and so game one, it went true to form in my mind, because I thought the Pacers, with their dearth of playoff experience, Chris, would be tight. And let's face it. I mean, their butt cheeks were a little tight in game one. That was to be expected. You got a Tyrese Halliburton, great player that's never played in the playoffs before. You got McConnell that's played in a few games. Miles Turner's played not a few years. And Siakam is the guy that's really got the major playoff experience. But other than that, a bunch of young guys, Neesmith, you know, Obi Toppin, a bunch of young guys. Shepherd. Don't have a lot of playoff experience. So, and then conversely, the Bucks, you know, we got championship experience. You got Dame that's got a lot of playoff experience, big moments in Portland. And so it started off like I would have expected. Yeah. I didn't expect the Pacers, Chris, to go, 0 for 12, 0 for 13 from the three-point line. I mean, they were throwing up so many bricks, man. You could tell. Wide open shots.
How much of that, MJ, do you account or do you blame on the Pacers having nerves, or is it the Bucks, you know, good defense?
Well,
been missing so many in the beginning. Like, look, I noticed the Bucks had a heightened sense of closing out, of getting up, of trying to run guys off. Like, I noticed, like, that was looked like a concerted deal. How much of it do you think was the Pacers, you know, having nerves, or was it the Bucks defense?
Well, I thought the Bucks in their defensive game plan, and it was pretty obvious all week long. Number one, you give the organization, the coaching staff credit. They put together this scout team. Man, I went into practice one day watching this scout team of Andre Jackson Jr. and Chris Livingston and just all these young, fast, two-way contract guys just flying up and down the floor. And what they did, Chris, main rotation guy baskets, Chris Middleton and Brooke and Bobby and those guys, they wouldn't take the ball out. The coach is like, don't take the ball out. Just get it out the net and go. And they got it out the net. They pushed it. So it was a whole big emphasis on transition defense, getting back, matching up, and then finding Tyrese Halliburton right away. And so they did a great job of that and corralling him. So anytime there was a ball screen, I mean, he was blitzed by Bobby Portis. He was doubled at times. He was always looking at two players in front of him as he's trying to come off those ball screens. And that's the old head of the snake type of mindset that the Bucks took, trying to just cut him off, trying to cut off that head of the snake, Tyrese Halliburton. And so they minimized, you know, his effectiveness. He had averaged like 23, 24, 25 points a game against us, double-figure assists. What did he have yesterday? He had nine, eight, and seven, which is, you know, the 9 points is the thing that stands out. He just took seven field goal attempts.
That's shutting him down. That's doing a good job. That's minimizing his shots. That's taking away his looks. That's making Halliburton into a penetrator, a guy that's going to drive and kick, which, you know, he's less effective. Like yesterday, they probably needed him to hit some shots. Guys weren't knocking shots down. He was turning into facilitator. But can you talk to me about your boy Dame Time? Dame Time, man. Like, dude, this is the dude yesterday.
Yeah.
And I think that the Bucks Nation have been waiting to see the entire season. Just the cojones, the big game, you know, stepping up, the shots, the way he did it. Talk to me about Dame.
Well, you know, it reminded me of All-Star Weekend, you know, when he won the three-point shooting contest on that last corner jumper, when he went out and became the MVP of the All-Star game and just really played with so much confidence. And that's one thing that Doc has talked about with Dame. It's just he's unshakable with his confidence. And look, Dame, by anybody else's standards, to average 24-7 is a really, really good year. That's an all-pro year. You know, what, one or two teams, three, third team, something. Give me something.
Right.
And, but for him, it's a so-so year. It was okay. It wasn't a great year by his standards. He averaged, 30 a game last year. But we knew that it was in there. You know, we've seen glimpses of that during the course of the season. It started off in game one against the Sixers when he just took over that game down the stretch. And so he came out, and you knew without Giannis that he was going to come out with that aggressive mindset. And even though he was aggressive, he still didn't come out firing and just trying to dominate the basketball. He kind of allowed the game to come to him. And then when he took over, man, he took over 19 of the 30 point score. He scored them in that first quarter, another, 16 in the second quarter. But Here's the caveat. Swing low, sweet caveat. Here's the caveat. If I'm Rick Carlisle, I'm feeling pretty good about the fact that Dame was 0-for-5 in the second half. He was 0-for-5. So they doubled him. They sent another defender at him. Now,
damn, they picking him, but they were picking him up full. They were picking him up way, yeah. way back. They were picking him up way back.
Denying him the ball on the inbounds. I mean, really making him work, picking him up 94 feet. And so we expect to see more of that in this series against him. But it also, Chris, because of all the defensive resources that was directed toward Dame, it allowed Chris Middleton some freedom. Great game, 23 and 10. Bobby Portis had some really good plays in the second half, did a terrific job. Brooke Lopez in the fourth quarter made some huge, huge buckets for the Bucks. I mean, Malik Beasley hit a couple of timely buckets late in that game. So, and Patrick Beverley, let's not forget my boy Pat Bev.
Yeah, yeah. And not to cut you off, because I was going to say something, but you were mentioning the names. And I was going to say Pat Bev did a hell of a job as far as like a backup PG. When he's out there helping run the team, getting the offense together, talking, you know, he's sitting on the sideline with the ball. He's totally engaged. This is what you had talked about earlier in the season, a few episodes ago, about how that type of energy is contagious. It spreads around like wildfire. So now everybody's talking. Everybody's getting to a little bit of that Pat Bev energy. You know, I thought that was great for the Bucks.
Well, and that kind of energy, that's playoff energy. That's so conducive to successful half court playoff basketball. And that's what this game was all about. Now look, the Pacers did get out in transition. I think 19% of their possessions were transition possessions, but they did not score on a majority of those. They did not execute and really hurt the Bucks in transition like they can. A live ball rebounds in transition, they got out 44% of the live ball rebounds led to a transition play, but you know, they only scored, 81.3 points per play, points per 100 plays, which is like
0.83. Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, 22nd percentile. You know, out of 100 transition plays off of live ball rebounds, they scored 81, you know, 81. Now, this is Ben Falk. This is, Cleaning the Glass, my favorite site in terms of cleaning out all the noise, all the garbage time stuff. And so you look at those numbers, playoff numbers really, really – are magnified and really, really exemplified in a more pure form in Cleaning the Glass than any other stat platform that's out there right now. So kudos to Ben Falk and the job that he does. But the Bucks really did a nice job. And then the other key thing, half court playoff. We've been talking about this. The pace of the game. How many possessions does the Pacers average in the course of the regular season? I think 102 per 48 minutes. Last night's game, 96 possessions each team. Right. You know, so you sharply reduce the number of scoring opportunities in terms of pace of the game. And then you look at points per possession. Pacers, 97.9 points per possession. That's the 15th percentile. That percentile is based on playoff teams and playoff games this section of the season. The Bucks, 113.5 points per possession. That's real solid. But then in the half court, even more solid, Indiana, 85.5 points per possession in half court, 26th percentile. The Bucks, 106.5. So the Bucks, Chris, executed. Now, Dame's 35 had a lot to do with it, but that second half, the execution was there. When the Pacers made their run, they closed it to about, 12 or 10 or something late in the game.
It was 10.
So the Bucks did a great job of executing and making the plays. Chris Middleton, Brooke Lopez. I mean, Malik Beasley had a jumper. Bobby Portis had a nice couple of takes in that sequence. They did just enough to win that game by 15 and hold on to that tremendous kind of cushion that Dame Lillard provided for them. So, but again, if I'm Rick Carlisle, the adjustments that I make, you know, probably a little bit more attention to Dame right away, not allowing him to get going out the gate the way he did. But if I'm the Bucks, I better be concerned about corner three-point shots. The Pacers, 13% of their field goal attempts were corner threes.
Yeah, and dribble penetration, just getting downhill, getting in the paint, man.
Dribble penetration. And it's really interesting that teams are doing something, Chris, that they hadn't done in years past, at least the last few years. And that's helping loading off of corner three-point shooters.
Yeah, and that's what I've noticed. So that brings three guys to the ball. And what we see, you saw, you know, Dame did it once. Somebody else did it. But you see, like, on the dribble penetration, I could see the guy from the corner dropping in. And I'm wondering, is that by design or is that a little bit of slippage in focus and concentration on that particular possession?
I you know, it's funny how, you know, it's kind of proprietary information you ask, and they really don't tell you a whole lot in terms of giving up numbers or stats. But I have to believe, Chris, that the analytics guys have found that it's to the team's advantage to maybe help more, especially strong corner three-point shooters. And depending who it is, you know, if it's a young guy with a lack of playoff experience, like a Neesmith, like a Shepherd knocked one down and then missed a couple, you know, something like that. I mean, it's probably a situational thing, but the Bucks have got to do a better job. A lot of those corner threes were point of attack breakdowns defensively, where you're allowing Nembhard to get into the key. You're allowing Neesmith one time did a great, you know, just high dribble. High rip through maneuver, got in the key, kicking out to Miles Turner, somebody left corner threes were open consistently. Yeah. So the Bucks need to do a better job of point of attack defense.
Adjustment.
Well, if they put just point of attack, I mean, but here's the thing, because my boy Tyrese Haliburton, I said the wannabe superstar. Well, he's a superstar. He's a tremendous player, great young man, Oshkosh Bagosh, local kid. We love him. Tyrese Haliburton, there was so much emphasis. Every time he came off a ball screen, Chris, Bobby Portis would double team and stay with him. He wouldn't just blitz and get back. He would double and stay. And then Haliburton, as smart as he is, high IQ ball player, would string it out, kind of drag him to the right two or three steps further, and then Miles Turner would space out on his pop the other direction. So it makes it an incredible run. And then sometimes, if it wasn't Miles Turner, Miles Turner would post up and would seal Chris Middleton, and then a Neesmith or somebody on that left side at the break line would catch that skip pass after Haliburton was doubled. And now Chris is sealed behind a big, and so as the Bucks try and X out that switching action on the weak side, Portis going in, Chris switching out, Chris is a count late because he's being sealed by Miles Turner. So Rick Carlisle, you know, it's some brilliant coaching that's about to happen in this series. And we just got a taste of it, man. We just got a taste of it in game one.
And it's a lot more tinkering that's going to go on with offensive strategy. Like if we're watching this stuff, you know, the Pacers are going to come out and adjust it. I expect the Pacers to do a little bit more in terms of going through Siakam. He had a really good game, 15 field goals. It's a lot of buckets to get in a playoff game. He's playing. He's live. And then the stuff off the bounce, getting into the mid-range. Middleton was matched up on him a lot, several possessions during the game. And then that's just post up, and it's all day. Then when it's Brooke, he's taking him too. So that is what I'm going to be watching for in game two, is how they're going to handle that Siakam thing.
He's a little too quick for Brooke Lopez, a little too crafty. He's quick and crafty. You know,
he's got that hezzy jumper thing.
Got the hezzy jumper, the herky jerks, all that good stuff going on. And when they ISO him in the middle against Brooke's gonna need some help from somewhere. And that's probably something that the Bucks are going to work on today. Look at film and figure out how they can give Brooke a little bit more support. But sure. I mean, the flip side of that is that if Siakam scores 36. And then Miles Turner, 17, nobody else over 10, T.J. McConnell, 10, you can kind of live with that. You know, you don't really have to overreact and say we're going to dedicate all these defensive resources at Siakam. It's almost like, you know, in the NBA, you know how it is. These guys are so good. Somebody is going to get off during the course of a basketball game. It's about these other guys, keeping these other guys in check. So if you can keep Haliburton, I think Haliburton is the guy. If we can keep him disrupted, having to look at two defenders, having to kind of hesitate and be a little tentative in terms of his aggressiveness, how he attacks and dishes, his passing. You know, he averaged, almost 11 assists a game. He was averaging like 25 and 12 when we played him back in December, whenever it was. That hamstring probably has slowed him down a bit. Hadn't played quite as well since the hamstring injury. So I would – but see, and that's the thing. injuries everybody knows about him. And so we all know about it. So now it's put as much stress on his legs as you can by making him escape dribble, making him have to beat two defenders, making him work extra hard to do his Halliburton thing.
Yeah, my thing with Siakam, though, is like after you drop 36 in the first game, there's going to be a heightened sense of where you are, of guys that just inherently, I feel like, he's going to get doubled.
Yeah.
So I think Indiana's going to have some of these open shots. They're going to hit the ones they didn't hit. I think this thing with Siakam needs to be locked in on, because the way in which he's doing it, it's just prime for him to be a facilitator. It's just so much attention is going to be on him and where he operates from the middle of the floor. It makes it hard to guard and guys to get out and rotate and all that. So I think that's going to be an issue game two.
Well, and I'll leave you with this. The biggest thing is that the Bucks won game one. I mean, there was a lot of doubters, you know,
haters all over the place but nationally.
But within good reason. I mean, without Giannis, the way they
but the way they've
beaten the Bucks 4 out of 5 games this year,
you know,
I was kind of wondering. I had a sense that the Bucks would come out with this sense of urgency and play as well as they did yesterday. But you never know. You never know until you see it play out on the floor. I had a sense that the Pacers would be tight, but you never know. You know, until you see it play out on the floor. But here's the thing. Pacers are not going to go 0-for-13 from the three-point line. They started to heat up a little bit. Started to heat up a little bit later in the game, and I think that'll be a carryover for them. I think game two is going to be much more of a competitive basketball game. But again, for the Bucks, it's all about, you know, executing offensively in the half court, transition defense, slowing these guys down, limiting the game to about 96, 97, 98 possessions, and making each possession magnified offensively, each one worth more. So now that pressure starts to build. And then Dame probably not going to have another 35-point first half, we don't think. So you're going to need some contributions. Again, Chris Middleton, Bobby Portis, somebody else has got to be kind of an X factor. You know, AJ Green missed about 3 wide open.
Yeah.
Wide open.
Yeah. Doc Gabriel.
You know,
yeah.
But he's, you know, so he's a guy that I expect to knock down wide open shots too. So
for sure.
That's all the beauty of the playoffs, the game-to-game adjustments. The game-to-game, not only coaching and team adjustments, but mindset adjustments by different players. So different players are going to step up and break through and play like we didn't see them play in game one. And that's the thing that happens in the playoffs, game to game, man. It's so intense. It's so much fun. It is part of the fantastic voyage that we bring into you here on the Here District. Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, man, we're in the midst of it right now. We're in the midst of the journey. This is what we've been waiting for. And game one was a beautiful thing to watch. And we'll be with you following all the action as it unfolds in this series that I expect to go. What do you think the series is going to go? How many games?
Bucks in six.
Yeah, Bucks in six. Let's go, Brandon Jennings. Bucks in six, maybe seven.
It's just. I feel like it's a 6-game series. I just do. I don't think it's going to go seven. I don't think it's going to go seven.
So we got to go ahead and beat them one game. Go beat them one game in Indiana. Hopefully, hold court the next time we play them. Then Giannis.
Is Giannis out the whole series?
No, it's kind of a game. It's doubtful going into game one. Now you win game one, you're almost have the luxury of resting him again. Game two, let him heal up a little bit more, and then you know letting him come out game three in Indiana on a Friday night with about 7, 8, 9 days, whatever it's been, 2 weeks rest since the injury. But this whole week, just having having that off. But I hesitate because knowing Giannis, I mean. You never know. I mean, if he's feeling good and he's a quick healer, he's shown that historically, it wouldn't shock me to see him come out and play in game two. But we'll have to wait and see how that pans out. But, man, it's going to be a heck of a series, man, and just a great way to start. And that's got to give this team, this organization, this city, and us too here at the Here District a lot of confidence, a lot to feel good about. The Here District, Marcus Johnson, Chris Johnson, we'll be back at it.
The Milwaukee Bucks are postseason ready. Don't miss out on the action. Secure your single game tickets for the Bucks playoffs presented by BMO now at bucks.com/playoffs.